Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Today we have a special Celtic holiday show timed to the winter solstice and featuring runes, an ancient European form of divination, as well as some thinking about the modern celebration of Christmas. According to our guest today, who is something of an expert on these matters, the strangely familiar markings of runes create a direct connection with living elemental spirits deeply connected to nature, the earth, and the cycles and the seasons. Before Christianity, runes formed a living part of spiritual lives and the practices of indigenous peoples of Europe and the British Isles, influencing holiday traditions and celebrations, including that of the winter solstice. Our guest believes it is time to access the deeper wisdom of our ancestors and get down to the root of celebration. The last thing we need to make the holidays meaningful is more tinsel to hang on a plastic tree. Our guest today on this special holiday edition of Pathways is Ingrid Kincaid. Ingrid is a spiritual guide who works on a shamanic level with the runes and teaches ancient earth-honoring spirituality. Ingrid carries the medicine bundle of her European British Isles ancestors and delights in sharing ancient wisdom. Whether reading the runes, teaching, mentoring, or coaching, the wisdom she shares is grounded in ancient, earth-honoring spiritual practices and rooted in the practical, creative, magical, and intuitive experiences of her own life. Hello, Ingrid, and welcome to the Pathways program.
Hi.
Now, this can be a very stressful time of year for many people. Why is that?
Well, I believe a lot of the stress that we experience this time of year is that we forget actually what time of year it is. And living here in the Northwest, it's evident as we look outside that it's winter. The trees lose their leaves, things become very dormant and quiet, and it's a time, we have storms, but it's also a time of very long, dark nights and short days. And so, as humans, we are so connected to nature and to the elements, even if we think we're not, we still are. Our bodies know what time of year it is. And so, this is a time that, truthfully, we would be well served by going inside ourselves, going inside to mimic with our lives what's actually happening outside. And so a lot of the stress that comes this time of year is from the frenzy that's created by the artificiality of the holidays, so what we call holidays, because there's such a great imbalance. It's an imbalance of going out, spending money, buying gifts, partying, visiting, all the things that in and of themselves may be good and valuable, but not in the way that we're doing them in an excessive amount, and also almost like a forced amount because the calendar says that this is the time we're supposed to do it. And that's stressful on many levels. Stressful because we're not honoring the time of the dark, we're not honoring the season of the year, and yet we say we are because we call the season the holiday season. And
yeah, so all of this partying and shopping and crowds at the malls that we see this time of year is energetically not appropriate to the nature of the season, is that what you're saying?
Right, the nature of the season as it would be with regard to the season of the earth.
The season in nature, yeah.
Rather than a holiday season. And again, it's not that I would say to someone, well, don't shop or don't go to a party, but to what I encourage people to do is really look at what they're doing and why they're doing it and how it's affecting not only their life but affecting the lives of those that they love and the lives of the people that are around them. And so that's where I would take someone back to the teachings or the root of the teachings of people that lived more in harmony with the land. And for most of us, majority of us living here, we do have ancestral roots that come from northern Central Europe, from the British Isles, from Scandinavia. So we, our ancestors would have known and would have honored and celebrated the season, but in a way that's very different perhaps than what we are familiar with.
So you feel that we are out of balance in the way that we approach this particular season. How can we come into balance, and what perhaps can we learn from what our ancestors did?
Well, one way to come into balance would be to remember that there must be an equal amount of light and dark. And when I say dark, a lot of times I get people's response of that's negative or it's dangerous or evil. But when I say dark, I actually mean that absence of light, and in this time of year, the fact that this is the time of year when we have the longest nights and the shortest days. And it's hard for us, we're out of balance already with that, because there is no darkness in our culture. You know, it's almost impossible to even sleep in the dark anymore because you've got some kind of light going on everywhere. So that's an imbalance, and then we're putting ourselves out into the shopping malls and the bright illuminated stores and all of this that is bringing, celebrating and honoring light, but there isn't the balance of the darkness. So what I encourage is to think about this celebration, this holiday at winter solstice, was actually a time of year when our ancestors would have been indoors. And that it would have been the time after the harvest, after the bringing in of all the things that were necessary for them to in order to survive the winter, because the winter would last clear into like February and March. And so to bring yourself into your home energetically and literally, and to find something in your home that would be the equivalent of, if you don't have a fireplace, find something that would be the equivalent of a hearth. And the hearth in and of itself represented the heart center of a home. It was the place where you cooked. It was a place where you had your heat in most instances. It was a place where you had a light source in the winter. And it was a place of gathering. So the hearth then would be a good representation, a good way for us in the modern world in which we live to think of creating something in our home that was a hearth center, and then bringing our energy back into our home, even if we live by ourselves, it doesn't matter, just whatever that represents to you, bringing yourself back in to that heart center of your home and exploring what it would feel like to actually sit in the dark, maybe just a little ember of a fire in the fireplace, or perhaps a candle or two, and to actually feel the season, to feel what it was like to live at a time when there wasn't the artificial light, when there wasn't an expanding and going out, but an actual coming in, because it actually meant survival. Having fire in the hearth, having food to eat, having a light source was part of survival. And that's a stillness, a sobering way for us to come back and to honor this time of year and to honor the beauty and the magnificence of the way the seasons work.
But I think it would be easy to suppose that our ancient ancestors would have loved to have artificial light, and part of the reason they had a fire going was for the light. So it's kind of ironic in that sense. In a sense, it seems like by you recommending that we go to the hearth and sit by the fire, which is a source of light, it's also a source of shadows and flickering, and you know, it's kind of an interesting nexus between the light and the dark. But is that what it means for you? Does it represent the kind of a combination of the return of the light, which is the solstice when the days start getting longer, and the dark at the same time? Does fire represent a hybrid of that?
Well, yes. One of the things that I sense in working with people and exploring this concept is that it's very difficult for us to truly celebrate the return of the sun, the return of the light, and to celebrate the light, even the light of summer, if we don't truly know and understand and experience what the stillness of the darkness is. And that perhaps, yes, the fire represents at this time of year in the hearth that little glimmer of hope that you know that the sun will return, that the days will get longer and the nights will get shorter. It might, if you wanted to push into it a little more, actually sit with yourself or your family in total darkness. See what it would be like this time of year to come together and sit in the dark so that as a people we could experience something that most of us rarely ever do. And the question was that you had led with, how this is a stressful time of year, and part of the stress is that we don't have this stillness that comes from the darkness.
Because but we're afraid of the dark, and it's understandable, mm-hmm. isn't it? Understandable that humans are afraid of the dark. Isn't this why we're obsessed with light, in your opinion?
Yes, people are afraid of the dark. I would say that a lot of times our fear of the dark is something that's been taught to us.
You don't think it's instinctive?
No. I believe that it actually has in most instances been taught to us, and it's become frightening because we measure our life experience by our eyesight. And there's nothing that exists in the dark that doesn't exist in the light. If we were to turn off all the lights in the room we're sitting in, all the furniture is still going to be here. Just because we can't see it with our physical eye doesn't mean that it isn't here. And so our obsession with light is because we're also obsessed with our ability to see using our physical eyes. And I would encourage people to explore what it would be like to develop being able to see without your eyes.
So now most people, they think of the solstice and the return of the light and the days are going to start getting longer, and they feel hopeful about that. They're happy about that, the dispelling of the darkness because of the radiation of the light. The days are going to be longer. But you're saying that we need to balance that out with an appreciation of the dark itself, that we might as well be, that we ought to celebrate the abundance of the dark at this time of year rather than just, you know, be focused on it going away. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, so why do you say that?
Well, part of it is because we don't celebrate at summer solstice the return of the dark.
No, because we don't like the dark.
We don't like
okay,
the dark.
Okay, so tell us, what's good about the dark?
Well, the dark, if you stop thinking of the dark as being evil or bad or the place where evil and bad exists, the dark is the complete and perfect balance to the light. They do not exist separate from each other, and they don't lack anything. We would never say that we need to bring darkness into the light any more than we would say we need to bring light into the darkness, because they exist separate.
Well, we need to bring light into the darkness if we want to see something.
If we want to see with our eyes.
Yeah.
But we also have lost the ability, because we're so light focused, that we've lost a lot of our ability to see in the dark. I believe our ancestors could see more in the dark.
But that's why God gave us flashlights.
That's right. How long ago was it that he invented the flashlight? So let's go back to that question that you asked about the darkness. I like to use the example of a tree, because that's something that's universal and people can relate to. We look at a tree and we see that which is above ground. We see the branches and the trunk and we see the leaves. And if we only would think of the tree in that way, we would miss the part of the tree that's actually underground. And in a lot of instances, in most instances, the root system, including the taproot, the thing that is underneath the ground that we don't see, is just as big and perhaps even more important than the tree above the ground. Because you can cut a tree off and it can regrow itself from its root, But rarely do you cut a tree off and say that that tree is going to re-root itself and grow again. So that root system that is hidden, that's below the surface, that's in the dark, is the place where we get, where the tree accesses the water, it accesses the minerals, it accesses all the nutrients that are brought up out of that place into the trunk and then fed out into the branch system. At winter, what happens for most of the trees, even with the evergreens, they go into a stillness and they bring that energy back out of the branches and the leaves and back into the trunk and then channel it back into the ground. And that, yes, winter solstice is a celebration of the return of the light. And I'm saying it's hard for us actually to celebrate the return of the light if we never really experience the dark. And that there's a frenzy that happens this time of year that is an artificiality that has nothing to do with the celebration of the winter solstice.
You might want to consider doing some classes on helping people get over their fear of the dark. It sounds like it would be right in alignment with what you're teaching about the winter solstice.
Yes. Oh, I do, actually. I have a series of classes about dark moon wisdom.
Uh-huh.
And so I teach those regularly here in Portland.
What is this deep moon wisdom?
Dark moon wisdom. It's a series of discussions, classes about honoring the light and the dark, and it's based upon the fact that we have a full moon. People recognize full moon, but they rarely recognize what's called the dark moon. Most often people will say to me, "Well, do you mean the new moon?" And my answer is, "No, I don't mean the new moon. I mean the dark moon, because the nature of the moon is dark. It doesn't shine. It doesn't lack anything. It just is dark. The reason we see it is because it reflects the light of the sun. One day every 28 days, the moon is in the night sky and it is not reflecting any light from the sun. And that is the night that is the dark moon. The moon is actually itself. And we've forgotten that piece. We have lost connection with, we're fascinated with the full moon. And we have forgotten the power and the energy that exists in the dark moon when the moon is actually its own essence without a reflection. And so I have created several of the topics of this series are about the dark moon of the dark, embracing the dark, the things that deal with the dark like death and dying, and present this in a way that we can open up a conversation and talk about why are we afraid of the dark. What have we been taught? What does the dark, you know, why is it always connected to evil or badness? And where did that thought come from? And also learning how to be still, be silent, and go back into the dark of yourself and learn to see without your eyes.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And we should do another show on that whole topic about the dark moon and the celebration of the dark. Getting back to the holidays, because we're going to have Christmas here in a couple days, you make the point that we can't put the Christ back in Christmas because he doesn't belong there. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is just that Jesus doesn't belong in Christmas, because the celebration this time of year that we call Christmas was actually a winter solstice type of holiday that existed in the countries of the north, Germanic, Northern Europe, Scandinavia, the British Isles. They all honored and celebrated this time of the dark and the winter solstice. And you see it evident in evergreen trees. You see it because of snow. You see it with reindeer. You see it with Amanita mushrooms, those lovely little mushrooms that they have with their little snow-covered cottages. All of these are symbols that come from a northern part of the world where there's snow and dark in the winter. Jesus, as an entity, whether you believe in him or not, if you look at it, that's a semi-arid part of the world. Jesus is a desert god. And that whole thing of celebrating the birth of the sun was brought by Christianity into the north, And in order to make it more palatable or interesting to the people, if you're already celebrating the rebirth of the S-U-N, sun, then we're just going to take all of those symbols, all of those images, and put them on top of the birth of the S-O-N, which came from a culture of people who had camels and palm trees, not evergreens and reindeer flying, pulling sleds. Mm-hmm. And so when people say, well, you'll have less stress if you put Jesus or Christ back into Christmas, that's not true, because it's like he doesn't belong there. This is not really what this celebration is about. And that's just more of the same. Try to put something into a holiday that is incongruent. And then when you pull that away and you begin to honor the celebration as a seasonal celebration, and you step back into the real meaning and the energy and the essence of it, then you can pull away a lot of the stress of it.
How did the Christmas tree get started as a symbol? I mean, the tree is, how is the tree, you mentioned the tree with the light and the dark. Is the tree been associated with the winter solstice in pagan times?
Yes. And that would be a big, long conversation. But it was common practice in many of these countries to bring in a log at night, which we commonly call the Yule log, Y-U-L-E, Yule log, mm-hmm. and to burn that in the hearth, because it represented that burning away of the old, and the fire released the potential or the life that existed in that log. Then, remembering that these people started their day with the setting of the sun. Their days didn't start in the morning, they started at night.
Oh.
Then when they would rise, so for the Celts, they started their year in the dark, and they started their day by going into the dark. So then in the morning when you woke up, the tree would be in the house. So these evergreen trees were brought into the house. The boughs of the trees, or the tree itself, represented the potential of the regrowth and rebirth, because the evergreen held within it the promise that the sun would always come back. There are also other directions that people go saying that bringing the boughs into the house gave a place for the tree spirits to survive through the winter. And, you know, any of these things with the holly and the mistletoe, all of them have their root in these celebrations of people that lived in a part of the world where there was snow in the winter, where the evergreens were prevalent, and where things like holly and mistletoe grew naturally. And that's, again, where when you start looking at the symbol of this season, this that we call Christmas, this all of the symbology is part of the culture of the people that lived in this part of the world where it got dark in the winter.
So do you think that people should tend the sacred hearth fire for quite a while after the winter solstice, or throughout the winter perhaps?
Throughout the winter, the hearth fire was actually tended all year round.
But what do you do if you don't have a fireplace?
Create sacred space in your home that you designate perhaps as the equivalent of a hearth. It might be as simple as a coffee table in your living room where you sit around as a family and maybe have a candle and represent the energy of what the hearth meant, even if you don't actually have a fireplace.
Now, and what other kinds of seminars and counseling work do you do in general?
In general, I work with people in what I call reconnecting with their roots. And so that we've talked about that already. This reconnecting with the root is my way of saying, how can we go back inside of ourselves and reconnect with that place where our deep wisdom dwells, where we source ourselves, our lives, that is not in opposition to, but perhaps different from our mental knowing. And so that reconnecting with our roots is going to also involve teaching stillness, teaching silence, and teaching an honoring of the dark.
Now, you have a website. Let's be sure to tell people about that. What is the web address?
It's therunewoman.com.
The Rune Woman, and Rune singular, all one word.
Right. So The Rune Woman, Rune is spelled R-U-N-E, therunewoman.com. And if you go to my website, then I have information there about the Dark Moon series that I teach regularly in Portland. I have information about the Celtic teachings, the teachings of the Norse, and I also offer to people what I call rune readings or rune counseling. I do spiritual counseling and mentoring using the wisdom of this ancient system of, it's like an alphabetic system or hieroglyphics, using that ancient wisdom to help individuals reconnect with their own sense of self and their own inner wisdom, and from that place finding a way to live in harmony with that, which will bring the balance back. I really believe that what we're looking at now today is a great amount of stress and difficulty that we face is because we've lost our balance. We've really lost our balance.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today, Ingrid. It's been a pleasure having you. Thank you for coming in this time of year and helping us have a deeper understanding of the season. Thanks again for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
But once again, we have run out of time. And for those who tuned in to the Pathway Show late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of a new book entitled Intuitive Intelligence, which shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. And you can replay this entire interview anytime you want via the internet at divination.com, that's divination.com, or kboo.fm. Today we have been visiting with Ingrid Kincaid, also known as the Rune Woman. To our listeners, I want to say thank you for tuning in to Pathways. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. This is your host, Paul O'Brien, reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways and its podcasts, the interview program dedicated to personal and cultural transformation. Thanks again for tuning in and being a part of it.